Hello and welcome everyone. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo.
Every time that we get together, I can't help but emphasize that I'm not diagnosing or treating you. I am not sitting in or replacing a relationship with a practitioner. That is your relationship with a qualified practitioner is where you would turn to find out if these protocols are indeed for you. So if you are under the care of a doctor, if you've been diagnosed with any kind of gut or other condition, make sure that you have an intelligent discussion with your practitioner about what we're talking about, especially if they haven't given you any options besides drugs, because there are a lot of options. And if that practitioner doesn't seem so cooperative, maybe you can take a look around and see if you can find one who is, because there are quite a number of practitioners now are really getting on the bandwagon and understanding and starting to believe that indeed what we eat has an effect on the functioning of our digestive tract. Wow, what a concept. I remember when I tried to get that point across to a doctor many a year ago, it was over 30 years ago, when I was ill and I was having digestive issues and the burning and the doubling over pain, and nobody found anything on the tests and just told me to take ulcer medication. And I asked that fated question that has changed my career path ever since. And that was, could it be what I eat? Could it be my diet? And the doctor just laughed at me and scoffed and said, of course not. Diet doesn't have anything to do with the health of your stomach or your digestion. And ignorant as I was and young as I was probably 25 at the time, I thought, well, that doesn't even make sense, right? Because all this food goes through the tube. And how could it not affect? How could it not have an effect on what I was feeling? So that's what started this whole just journey to find the truth that has led me to where I am today. So I'm gathering together a lot of the information that it took me many years to put together into a set of protocols to help you to determine where in your gut the malfunction, the breakdown is actually happening, and what you can do to start to restore function. And I want to reiterate, we are not talking a this for that approach. That's not my approach to healthcare. We're not looking at, oh, well, if you have leaky gut, these are the herbs that fix it. If you have H. pylori infection or an ulcer or reflux, these are the processes that fix it. No, we're looking at these are some of the ways that you can change your diet, your lifestyle, your stress, even your movement and your postures that are going to help facilitate the optimal function of your gut. The ultimate healer lies within you. That's who you. You are the healer. And we are just trying to get your habits and diet and things in the environment out of the way so that it can become better functioning. So I'm happy to be here sharing this stuff with you. And again, if you're working with a doctor, if you're on medication, don't ever just stop your medication cold. Check in with your doctor and you should be able to find somebody who'll be working with you cooperatively. I'm going to give you the tools. I want to empower you to be your best health advocate, because you're the one that's going to be there the rest of your life. So this is a hot topic, so let's just jump right in, okay? So first of all, we're dealing with an intestinal tract, a stomach, the gastrointestinal tract, gastro meaning stomach and intestinal meaning intestinal, obviously. So the lining is coated with a mucous membrane, and then there's little villi or projections that line it. And we go through all the details of the anatomy and physiology in the presentation that's on the website. So I don't want to take a lot of time going through that right now. But what I want to reiterate is what it looks like when that mucosal lining gets damaged and disrupted. And it ain't a pretty picture. If you look at the picture I have up on the slides, you see the little arrows. They're pointing to spots that have little, they like lacerations. And this is just the small intestine. And this is what happens to those villi. The villi are those projections when they get damaged. And imagine that's a little opening. And this is just imagine you just ate some tomato sauce or you just had some lemon water. What it might feel like rubbing up against that mucosal lining where the protection is no longer there. Okay, it could be painful. So if you're applying some of the principles that I'm giving you as like healthy things for the gut, and you're not getting the results, or you're still getting burning and stinging and all that, it could be that you've got this disruption in the mucus, the protection, and the underlying tissue is being irritated. Because the mucus doesn't, if the mucus is intact, it ain't gonna hurt. It doesn't matter how hot that cayenne pepper or ghost pepper or whatever it is you eat is, it's not going to damage an intact mucosal membrane. It's when it gets disrupted. And that's what we're here to talk about, is ways to restore that integrity of that mucus lining. So if you're doing some of the things that we talk about, like say lemon water in the morning, and you're feeling it's just not comfortable, you may have to take a step back and work on some of the mucilaginous herbs, and of course, eliminating the foods that further disrupt, and maybe do that for a few weeks before you can even add some of the therapeutic things, and look at some of the therapeutic foods that might be soothing, like coconut oil or avocado, depending on where your sensitivities lie. So this is the small intestine, and this is what it looks like when it's damaged. The stomach, this you can see here, these little holes, there's ulcers and tumors that can form in the stomach. Again, it's a disruption of that protective mucous membrane. And the stomach has the strongest, thickest, most beautifully carpeted lining of all the parts of the intestinal, the gastrointestinal tract, because in the stomach is where acid is produced to begin the breakdown of your proteins and help you to digest your minerals. So there's a lot more acid in the stomach than there is in the esophagus. The esophagus shouldn't have any acid except what's coming down, so lemon juice and things like that. And the small intestine doesn't get exposed to acid for very long. Only the very top part of the duodenum, the upper part, when the stomach contents first dump in there. But immediately upon being dumped into the small intestine, that chyme is what it's called, is that chewed up, broken up, you know, mush of food that comes from your stomach and into the small intestine. That goes in there, and immediately both the pancreas and the gallbladder are dueling banjos, so to speak, and they're dumping out bicarbonate to neutralize, because the ideal pH of the small intestine, the duodenum, where the digestive enzymes function, is actually alkaline. So acid in the stomach, alkaline in the small intestine, and with the help of your pancreas and your gallbladder, we produce this bicarbonate that neutralizes it. So you can see there's a lot of ways that this can go wrong, right? You can have things that damage that nice mucosal blanket that lines the GI tract. You can have acid that spills into the wrong place. In other words, it goes up the esophagus instead of going further down. You can have pancreas and gallbladder that don't do their jobs and secrete enough bicarbonate to neutralize the stomach, the contents of the stomach as they come in, and then we end up with a type of ulcer that's more of an ulcer in the upper part of the duodenum, which is a more rare type of ulcer, but still can happen. How does the stomach get an ulcer if it's got this huge, thick blanket of mucus protecting it? Well, you do things that disrupt that. And there's a lot of things, and we shared with you lists of foods that disrupt things like alcohol and caffeine, tobacco, and some pesticides. A lot of things can disrupt and break down that mucous membrane. So our goal in this whole process is to help that restore that nice thick blanket of mucus to line the whole digestive tract and to heal the damaged cells, to restore them back to normal. Okay, and then make sure that everything's in the right place. Okay, so these are the things that we're working on in the program. And so far we've taken you through some of the basics, and then the upper part, the esophagus, the teeth, the stomach. And then this module that we're in right now is on the small intestine. And like I said, the videos will be coming. So how do we go about repairing? Well, it's a process called the 4R process. And that term was coined by one of my mentors, Jeffrey Bland, who is a brilliant PhD biochemist who has this amazing memory and capacity for recalling facts. And he can recall studies. Oh, in the 1929 study by Hall and Wilbur, the blah, blah, blah happened. And in the 1987 study by these guys, this was studied. And you just sit there going, holy cow, this guy's brilliant. Well, he came up with this idea that in order to heal the gut, we have the 4R process. And it's catchy and it's easy to remember. And the 4Rs are remove, replace, reinoculate, and repair. And so far we've talked about some of these processes. Like right at the beginning, we talked about remove. Like remove those foods and those allergens and those disruptive gut, disruptive foods and habits that are hurting the gut. Replace. Replace the nutrients that we end up being deficient in as a result of nutrient deficient diets. Replace the enzymes that we don't get when we eat highly processed, cooked to high temperature foods. Replace the enzymes. Okay. We're also going to talk about replacing some of the other things further down. And we talk about reinoculate rather than replace when we talk about putting back in the good bacteria, the good gut bugs. So we call that reinoculate. And then repair is obviously fixing the damage. They don't necessarily have to be done in this order, although I highly recommend just start with remove. Because it's kind of like if you try to repair while you're still throwing gasoline on the fire, you're not going to get very far, right? You can start doing all these great things to repair your gut, but you're still putting in things that are fueling the fire. And that's a mistake I see a lot of people make, including some practitioners will just get a little bit ahead of themselves and just say, oh, you've got to heal your leaky gut. Here's some glutamine and some slippery elm, and that's going to help you. But if you're still drinking alcohol and eating allergens and eating gluten and dairy and sugar and processed foods and hydrogenated fats and all those gut damaging foods, you're not going to get very far with repair, right? So these are the 4 R's, and we're going to go through and review some of these in this presentation, and I'm going to share with you more details about the repair piece and the remove. And the other remove is to remove the gut bugs that don't belong there. And that one we're going to talk about a little bit more. So far, I've given you an action plan for getting your gut repaired. After all, this is the gut repair and alkalizing nutrition for digestion. The repair is important. The alkalizing nutrition is as important. So they work in conjunction with each other. You cannot be successful if you just do one without the other. So your very first thing to do was to complete online assessments. In the very beginning, I gave you a set of online assessments that help you to determine what point in the digestive tract or many points in the digestive tract the disruption's happening for you. Is it happening because you're not producing enough stomach acid? Are you producing too much stomach acid? Are you not producing enough enzymes? Are you having problems in your small intestine, your large intestine, liver and gallbladder? And these are all questions that are geared towards helping to pinpoint where the disruption may lie. And then I introduced most recently, in fact, just in the previous weeks, we just introduced a candida and leaky gut assessment. And that will help you to identify if some of the symptoms that you're having could be related to disrupted gut flora. In other words, overgrowth of candida or of parasites or of bacteria that maybe belong there but not in the quantity that you have it there. And then the leaky gut assessment will help you to help to determine, are you having some issues with the gut flora? I mean, with the gut membrane. Remember, I just showed you that picture where they had those little ulcerations. We're looking for leaky gut. And it's a serious problem. It's not just painful when you eat, but it disrupts the way that nutrients are absorbed. It doesn't also filter out the things that should not go into your bloodstream. You see, the digestive tract is actually a tube that's outside your body, right? Your mouth, it's protected from being inside your body by this membrane and these villi. And there's just little tiny openings in between that are supposed to only allow fully digested food particles. When they're broken down to their smallest constituents, like amino acids, fatty acids, vitamins, minerals. Okay, these are the things, and sugars, single sugars. These are the only things that are supposed to get into your bloodstream. Okay? And when there's a disruption there, these things that don't belong in your bloodstream get in there, and that wreaks havoc with your immune system. And we'll talk more about that. So the other thing I asked you to add was a daily AM gut rejuvenator before any food in the morning. Okay? Because your gut has been stagnant all night. You're sleeping. You're not digesting food, fortunately. Don't go to bed with food in your stomach or in your mouth because it's not a good idea. But it's been dormant, and we want to wake it up. And what we found is certain herbs and like something sour actually wakes it up and opens up the digestive tract and readies it for the food that's about to come. And a lot of these are based on naturopathic and herbal remedies that have been used for centuries. So I gave you a recipe, and I gave you actually several recipes for a daily AM gut rejuvenator. And the basic recipe is lemon juice or lime juice or orange or tangerine, but lemon or lime tend to work the best. You want to get something that has limonene in it, which is a component of the oil. So you can also put in the essential oils of lemon or lime or orange. Okay, so I usually put lemon or lime juice with some essential oils, lemon, lime, tangerine, orange, they all have limonene, and then I put a little bit of peppermint or spearmint or something with the menthols to wake things up. But that may not be the perfect remedy for you. Maybe you're allergic to citrus, in which case you could put a little apple cider vinegar to wake up the digestive tract. Okay? If you've got reflux, you may not want to put peppermint oil in there because peppermint oil can sometimes loosen or relax that lower esophageal sphincter. So the peppermint is really good if you have a lot of spasms in your gut. You know, it's really good for people with irritable bowel and bowel spasms. It's not so good if you have reflux. So you'll just have to experiment with it. Some people put a pinch of cayenne in there. And that's great unless you've got some really bad disruption of the mucus lining in the stomach, and also if you've got esophagitis, which is inflammation of the esophagus because you've had the contents of the stomach refluxing or backchucking, upchucking into the esophagus where the mucous membrane isn't strong enough, and that gets disrupted. So if you take cayenne or other things spicy like that and you get an immediate burning as it's going down, it indicates that you most likely have some disruption of that mucous membrane. Okay, and usually the burning you feel is not so much in the stomach, but it's in the esophagus. But when it gets really bad, it can be in the stomach, and you can have gastritis, inflammation of the stomach lining, or in fact ulceration. So there's several recipes in the recipe guide, and it's 140 something like that pages of recipes. And there's gut rejuvenation recipes, there's a leaky gut repair shake, there's slippery elm and marshmallow drinks that help to soothe the gut. There's a lot of really great recipes in there. Okay. So the other thing that I recommend is that you add daily green drinks or blended soups in the morning. And people ask, why? Why do I want to do this? Why can't I just have oatmeal for breakfast? Well, we want to start the day with a lot of green nutrition, a lot of chlorophyll-rich food. Very, very, very important to start the day with chlorophyll-rich food. Okay, so we start it. And we also want to start the day with protein, which we talk more about in our blood sugar balancing and also adrenal modules, because it's really important for hormone balance to have some protein in the morning. And that doesn't mean bacon and eggs. You don't have to have bacon and eggs in the morning, and I'm not really a big fan of them because they are not alkalizing nutrition. Not a great way to start the day. So I like to start the day with green foods and omega-3 rich seeds that are high in protein, like hemp seeds or chia seeds or whatever. But again, everybody's a little bit different, and depending on your own specific food sensitivities or specific conditions that we'll talk about, like specific carbohydrate intolerances or SIBO, which is a small intestinal overgrowth, you may not tolerate some of the foods that are quote-unquote healthy. And we have to modify that for a while. So we said add daily blended greens or blended soups. I like to do it in the morning. You can do it throughout the day. This can be juices. So people who have bad inflammation, like Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis or even diverticulitis, inflammation, outright inflammation and ulcerations in the gut, may not do real well with taking raw fiber. So I oftentimes take people off of salads for a whole month to allow it to heal in cases of extreme ulceration like that or inflammation. So, but some people with those conditions tolerate blended greens just fine. So we have them do cooked or raw blended soups. And some people, the only way to really get some good whole raw greens, which are loaded with folate and all kinds of other nutrients, chlorophyll, etc., is to juice them. So it's all a matter of finding your groove here. So if I've made a recommendation and said, hey, let's include some daily green drinks or blended soups, and every time you drink them, you feel lousy and you've explored all the different ways, we need to look at why. And I'd highly recommend that you get on the calls and explain to me your situation so I can help you make sense of it. So I'm presenting here some overall information to help you make sense of it. But if you need help making sense of it, there's two ways to get help. One is to type your questions in advance of the calls, or to come on the calls and ask the questions. So that's via asking me on the calls. And the other is by posting on the Facebook group. And we have a lot of activity there. I pop in there every day. I look in there to see who's posted. I make some comments. Lynn makes a lot of comments. So we have a lot of great stuff going on there. Big piece, and a lot of people overlook this, is before each meal you need to do a pre-meal ritual to ready your body for food. We talk a lot about this in the intro. We've talked about it in every single talk so far, how important it is to get yourself in the parasympathetic nervous system versus the sympathetic. That's the calm state of your nervous system where digestive enzymes flourish, and the valves between the sections of the digestive tract are opening and closing as they should. And digestion hums along when you're in parasympathetic. But when you're in sympathetic, it's your body's tightening up for the fight, getting ready to run away. Digestion doesn't work well there. It's a natural response by the body to shut it down. Now, you may not think that you have a lot of stress, but you can easily be getting stressed out by sitting down to a meal, especially if you've had some digestive issues where every time you eat something, it bothers you and you're stressed out not knowing if the food is going to bother you. So it's really important to take a few minutes before each meal to stop, to look at the food, to take in the beauty, to appreciate it. Go to the beach, go to the mountains. Do something special for yourself, shift your body in that moment, and your digestion will work better. And I really encourage you to do this, because if you come to me and say, well, I've been doing this or doing that food or doing that protocol, one of the things, and it's not working, I'm going to ask you is, how often are you doing that pre-meal ritual? And if you say, well, no, I haven't done that yet, don't make the mistake of thinking the food trumps everything, because it doesn't. Actually, the stress levels, the low stress can trump everything. Not to say to go out and eat junk and just stay not stressed, but studies have shown that makes a huge difference. So don't overlook this. And of course, eliminating the foods that hurt your digestion, including allergens, gave you a list, and that has all, a list of all the foods that hurt your digestion. And the main allergens, which I want you off of throughout this program, is to get yourself off of the gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, peanuts, and anything else that you have found yourself to be sensitive to. You're going to chew thoroughly, and this is the other piece. Yeah, I eat all this great food, but no, I don't chew thoroughly. I watch people eat. They take a few bites, and then they swallow. That does not expose the food fully to your digestive enzymes in your mouth. It doesn't break them down into small enough pieces. And those big chunks of food that get down into places that aren't supposed to handle big chunks of food, that damages. So really, chew. If you need to, I would highly encourage you to try some bitters about 15 minutes before the meal, especially if on that gut assessment you showed up to have low stomach acid. Bitters will help to just lubricate the entire digestive tract. It helps the stomach to make more acid. It helps the gallbladder and the liver to release more bile. It helps to lubricate the lining, moisten the lining, and helps the pancreas to make more enzymes. It just like wakes up your entire digestive system. There's something called the HCL challenge, and you can do that. I've given you instructions for doing that. It's not for everyone. If you're dealing with reflux, if you're dealing with burning pain every time you eat within a few minutes of eating, I don't recommend that you do the HCL challenge. HCL is hydrochloric acid, and it's the acid that your stomach produces to help digest protein, and it helps to digest minerals. And yes, most people with the burning pain have low stomach acid versus high, but if you're getting the burning, then you probably have some disruption of the mucous membrane. And even though you need the HCl, you can't take it in because it's going to burn. So what you need to do is spend a few weeks working at giving the mucous membrane some nutrition, like things like the mucilaginous herbs. And I gave you a list of all the mucilaginous herbs. We'll review them a little bit later in this presentation. And that would be things like slippery elm and marshmallow and plantain and aloe vera and licorice, or what I usually recommend is DGL, which is diglycerizinated licorice, which is the licorice that is got the active constituent that we could raise the blood pressure removed. Not everybody needs to do it DGL, but it's safer, so I just recommend the DGL. And then taking enzymes with your meals, especially if you're eating complex meals, if you're eating more cooked than raw foods, and you're eating combinations of foods that contain, you know, starches and proteins and all. I'm really a fan of good food combining if it needs to happen. And I don't like combining proteins and starches or sugars and fats and things like that. And when you do combine those things, it really helps to take some enzymes. What we're trying to do is take the load off your tract. So the more things you can do to help your digestion while you're healing it, the better the process is going to be, the progress is going to be, and the less you're going to have to take this stuff in the future. So these are therapeutic stages right now. We're not talking maintenance here. We're talking therapeutics, and it's a lot different than maintenance. Another piece of the gut repair action plan is you can try the soothing herbs, like all of the ones I listed as mucilaginous herbs. Slippery elm, you can make it into a tea, and I've given you a couple of recipes for that in the recipe guide. DGL powder you can take. You can take DGL lozenges if you have the burning in your esophagus, like you have reflux, and that's really good because it gets slowly broken down and soothes and heals. And studies have shown that the DGL works better than the over-the-counter medications like Prilosec and Nexium because it actually heals. So in the short term, if you were to give two people one Nexium and one the DGL, the Nexium people might have more instant relief. But as you study that over time, over a period of a week or two, by far the people with the DGL do better than the people with the Nexium, because the Nexium is just turning off the acid. And what does that mean? That equates to turning off digestion in the stomach. You turn off the acid, you've turned off digestion. And that's what they don't tell you. Yeah, just take the Tums and take the Nexium and take the Prilosec. You're turning off digestion. That's as clear as it is. So, yeah, you may have symptom relief, but you're not going to digest your food, and you may be creating more problems further down the line from all this undigested food going down. You're also going to create protein deficiencies and, you know, affects your hair and your nails and your structure. So that's important stuff. So staying calm and present at all meals, not just at the beginning. I like to go back and remind myself, because I can get caught up in that eating frenzy as well as everybody else. So staying calm and present and harness the power of appreciation and what Gabriel Cousins, Dr. Cousins calls conscious eating. Be aware of every bite and how it's affecting you. And I'm going to talk in, you know, paranoid eating, like where you're scared of every bite. I'm talking, oh, how's that sit? Oh, that feels nice. Ooh, I swallowed that a little. I went too fast. Being conscious about what you're doing and what you're eating. The next piece we're going to talk about a little bit more is our Candida and Parasite Cleanse Protocol and the Leaky Gut Protocol. I'm going to go into a little bit more detail, and there's a lot more detail on the site in the videos that are coming soon. So the Candida and Parasite Cleanse Protocol, if you do the Candida, Candida assessment. If you do the Candida assessment and that's got a high score, a very high score, then you probably want to do the Candida and Parasite Cleanse before you start the Leaky Gut Protocol. I mean, you can do them concurrently. You can do the Leaky Gut and then the Candida. You can do them, you know, one and then the other and then the other again. But if you have a very high score, sometimes it works best. Usually people do them concurrently or they overlap them. So you do the Candida and Leaky Gut and the Parasite Cleanse Protocol, which I'm going to share with you in a bit the details of. You also then do the 30-day Leaky Gut Detox and Intestinal Repair, and I'll share the details of that as well. Then I've given you a couple of extra pieces. If you're not responding as you think you should, if you eat the greens or drink the greens, and instead of those feeling really soothing and healing in your digestion, They don't. You may have to look at the modified specific carbohydrate diet food list that I've created, and I'll talk more about that in just a bit. And you may have to look at small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, which is basically where the bacteria that's supposed to be in your large intestine creep up and inhabit your small intestine and wreak havoc and cause bloating and gas and all kinds of burping and things like that. Let's just remember how to do this, guys. I want you to do this with every meal, with every piece of food that goes in your mouth, even if it's a smoothie, even if it's an elixir, even if it's just a few bites or one of my little protein bars. I want you to do this before each meal. You just stop. You stop everything. You put down the newspaper, you turn off the TV, you stop speaking, and you just focus. You look at the food, you tune into your heart, you breathe deeply and fully, and then really harness a feeling of sincere appreciation. You're really fortunate to have this beautiful food that you get to eat. We get to eat this stuff. We don't have to eat it. We get to eat it. We get to nourish our bodies and come from that place of appreciation, because the food becomes you. And if you're eating a bunch of food that's loaded with toxins, those toxins incorporate themselves into your cell membranes, and that's when we have trouble healing. So garnish this process. Practice this process every time you put food in your body. So let's take a little bit of a review as to what's really going on down there. What you're seeing on the screen is this, you know, these bumpy things, these little hills, basically, these little hills. Those are the villi in the intestine. And there's a bunch of little things on here that are protecting you. See the little Y's? Those are kind of antibodies that are protecting you. These are the only things, these little single molecules, are only things that are supposed to go through into your bloodstream. When you get larger ones that go through, that leak through, that creates an immune response in your bloodstream. So these are the bumpy things. Here's the villi. Right across here. This is the opening. This is where the food is coming through your intestinal tract. Okay? Down here is the bloodstream. So these are the villi. The villi protect, and they keep those from going through. So only these little guys are supposed to come through. But look what happens when we have a disruption. You see this little hole over here? Right here, there's this hole. Let me clear it. Here's a hole. And this big, long chain, four molecules goes through. You know, that could be a polypeptide. It could be a polysaccharide. They go through, and the body goes, wait a minute, this doesn't belong here. This is a foreign protein. Usually they're amino groups that stimulate the response in the bloodstream. And it goes, this must be a bug. This, maybe it's strep, or maybe it's staph, or something not good. So these little Y things are antibodies, and the antibodies attack, and you start to get an inflammatory response. And when these get into the bloodstream, ouch, these things can cause like drive-by shootings. When you start to mark them, and then the mast cells, the histamine-producing cells, the killer cells, attack those. And if whatever tissue happens to be nearby can be the victims of a drive-by shooting. So it's really important that we have good digestion and only allow these little bitty single molecules to pass through. And that we catch them before they go through, these little antibodies on the surface lining that prevent it. So this is just a little overview of how things work. Now, if things are going to be going wrong, in addition to assessing with those nice little forms I gave you, there's ways that you can assess using lab tests. You can look to see if you've got intestinal permeability. And this is intestinal permeability right here. Intestinal permeability. See? It's letting things go through. You can assess for that with a lab from Cyrex Labs. Now, they won't let you order the tests directly from them. They require a licensed physician to order them. So if you want to order any of these tests, you need to go to my site, drritamarie.com/lab testing, and you can order these tests. And when you do, you will get the results. We'll call the lab for you. They'll send you a kit. You send the kit in. You pay the lab. In some cases, you pay the lab. In some cases, you pay us. With the Cyrex, you have to pay the lab, I think. I don't remember. Somebody else on my team set it up. So however that works, you pay us or you pay them, or I don't know who pays who. But you pay for the test. You get the test done. They send you a kit. The Cyrex lab tests require blood to be drawn, and they will give you access to where you can get that blood drawn. The other test, and they have the intestinal permeability, they also have gluten antibodies, and they have cross-reactivity. So if you want to find out if gluten cross-reacts with hemp seeds, you can do that test. We also have stool tests, and stool tests will look at the flora, the gut bugs. Do you have pathogens? Do you have inflammation? And there's several different ones that I've used. Genova, Metametrics, who merged now, and then Diagnostics and BioHealth. And I order from different labs based on what is, I think, might be going on. If I'm really suspicious of things like H. pylori or some weird gut bugs, I usually go with BioHealth. They tend to have the best one for the bugs. But if I want to look at inflammatory markers and short-chain fatty acids and things like that, I'm going to look more towards the Genova and Metametrics. And sometimes I combine. I'll do an initial test with one, and then I'll go back and retest with people with another. So you're welcome to do these tests and find out what's going on. And those are good tests to do if you need it. I like to just go take people through the process first. And if the process doesn't help you, that's the time to go back and spend money, because these aren't cheap, right? The intestinal permeability is about $225. The stool tests are around $400. I think the BioHealth might be $300. The other thing you can do is gluten tests. We've highly recommended that you get off of gluten because gluten is damaging to the gut. If you're still on gluten and you have gut problems, get off the gluten. That's your first step. Doesn't mean it's going to solve your problems, but I know that if you don't get off the gluten, you will continue to have the problems. It's going to be really hard. So you get off the gluten, and you may not even realize how sensitive you are. I was speaking to someone today who said she got off of gluten about 8 or 9 months ago at my recommendation when she heard me speak, and she didn't realize she was sensitive to it, that a lot of her symptoms were related, and gradually things started getting better. And she had an accidental exposure, and she realized, oh my God, I haven't felt this in months because of that accidental exposure. The exposure is going to be exacerbate. It's going to be much more enhanced, and you're going to tell when you've been away from it for a while. And your gut is going to love you, and it can't heal if you keep doing gluten. Some of the gluten experts that spoke on the Gluten Summit talked about the fact that they don't believe that anybody really digests gluten. Some people digest it better than others, but they really don't think that we have the right enzymes for digesting the gluten the way it is today. Gluten has changed dramatically because we like our bread and we want it to rise, and we've hybridized it. So you can do stool tests. EnteroLabs.com, you can order directly from them. I find it to be the least expensive, the most reliable basic test, $99. You can test everybody in your family. And if you're of the type that says, well, I don't know if I'm sensitive to it, and I don't want to get off of it because it's a pain in the butt. It's a really hard thing to do to get off of gluten. I don't want to do it unless you prove it to me. That's how my husband and son were until we got the test done, and it turned out they had the antibodies. Very inexpensive. You could order it directly. And then you can do the antibodies complete via Cyrex Labs, and they'll just do something called gliadin and alpha gliadin and gluteomorphine, and a whole bunch of other little subcomponents. It's a very, very elaborate kind of a test. I don't think everybody needs it. I personally think that if you show signs of gluten intolerance and you do the EnteroLab test, which is a stool test you can do at home, they test for something called IgA antibodies. If that comes back negative and you still suspect it, then I usually have them run the Cyrex to go and confirm it. The last test on here is the SIBO test, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And that's actually a test where you take in a particular type of sugar that the gut bugs like to metabolize, and when they, if they're overgrowing in your small intestine, you're going to get a plethora of these guys overgrowing, which, by the way, if you do a SIBO test, you might feel worse while you're doing the test. That's a clue that you actually have it. And you're measuring the hydrogen and methane gas that they produce, and you're doing it via a breath test. That one requires a doctor's orders, and we're looking into setting that up so that we can order those tests if people need it, because for some reason, the lactulose, which is a syrup, a sugar syrup, requires a prescription. So we're looking to see if we can get that set up. Just a quick review, remove the foods that can hurt. That's the first R, right? Gluten, dairy, sugar. Sugar alcohol for some people. Not everybody has to remove sugar alcohol, but people who are sensitive to it do. And when we talk about FODMAPs, we'll talk about a little bit more about that. Refined carbohydrates, all allergens, caffeine, alcohol, lectins. Some people are sensitive to lectins in grains, beans, or dairy. So you remove the foods that hurt you. Trans fats, everybody needs to remove. Those are horrible fats that just create an oxidation stream going through your body. Nightshades for some people. I just had somebody eliminate nightshades. She eliminated them for a while, like probably over a month, and then went back and ate a lot of tomatoes, and no problem. So I told her, eat plenty of tomatoes for 3 straight days. She said, I love you as a result of that. Because if you love tomatoes and you're off of them for a month and then you want to go back on them, you can't tell if you have a sensitivity if you just eat a little bit. So I told her to eat a whole bunch of them for 3 days, and if it didn't aggravate her symptoms, she was good. So that's how you can test things too. And processed meats, you know, with all the nitrates and the preservatives and everything in them are really horrible. Heterocyclic amines and things like that. So these are foods that can hurt your gut. Just get rid of them. Some of them permanently, and some of them maybe just temporary while your gut is in a state of flux. But for sure, the things that everybody should always be off of would be processed meats, trans fats, alcohol, caffeine, anything they're allergic to, refined carbs, sugar, and I believe dairy and gluten. Some people can get away with a little bit of it, but I think most people do better without it. And there are some diets, like for Crohn's and ELF, that they make you eat refined carbohydrates. Eat white rice. Well, it may be good for it temporarily because the fiber in the brown rice hurts, but I believe that for most people with gut problems, getting off of grains in general is not a bad idea. So then there's the elimination diet. These are the top allergens: gluten, dairy, egg, peanuts, soy, and corn. Okay, you may have some others that you know about. And the way that you know is foods that you eat frequently can create an allergic reaction because of the leaky gut. Foods that you crave, they actually stimulate the receptors for morphines in the brain and cause you to crave more opiate receptors. And then foods you don't digest well. People say, well, I eat this and I get gas, but I know it's good for me, so I'll continue to eat it. No. No foods that cause gas and bloating. We're trying to cool down, calm down your gut. Avoid.